begin by saying that violence is something that's increasing in the world. And our exposure to it has just mushroomed exponentially with a lot of media and new mechanisms. I'm in my 60s, and when I grew up, it was really before TV, at least till I was somewhat older. And the degree of protection, even during World War II, is nothing compared to what kids are exposed to today, every day. They see it on TV all the time. They see it in the media. They see it on the internet. Pornography is something that almost all children who use the internet are bombarded with, and have many, a quarter of them have been solicited. This is a real problem, and it means that it's all the more important that the Family Violence Prevention Forum has started, because we definitely need to start dealing with this. Abusers also know what they can get away with, and sadly, the main thing they can get away with is violence in the family. It is hidden, it is, for many people, considered very private, and not something that anyone wants to deal with. So what is it? In fact, it's rather state-specific. I think we have to recognize that what can be done may depend on state laws. It's abuse by any parent, any person against their current or former intimate partner, although how far back a former intimate partner will be protected if they weren't married or if they're of the same sex, depends on state law. There are many states that aren't protecting any current intimate partners of the same sex. Dating violence is another problem that is not well understood or dealt with in the legal system. I think most people know about this. When I say with parents, it overlaps with abuse against a parent overlaps with elder abuse. I'm talking primarily about the laws, which are often very different. What are the different types of abuse? Well, first I want to say I've given a lot more examples except for the physical abuse, because I suspect most of you have a pretty good idea of what that is. First, I never use the term fight, unless it's, you know, like the fights on TV or two people who agree to have a fight. I talk about arguing when it's arguing, and somebody attacking the other person when that's what's happening. And unless it's truly mutual, which is very rare, but does happen, I stay away from that, because I think that adds to the confusion and the guilt that victims feel, and empowers the abuser into being able to say, see, it's all your fault. Physical abuse, one of the aspects that gets most ignored, and the reason I wrote it up, is strangulation. It's at least an attempted homicide. It is unbelievably painful. It is surprisingly leaving no visible scars or marks very often, unless there's garroting, i.e. a rope or something around the neck. And half of people who die from being strangled never have a visible sign outside their body. So take it much more seriously. It's very implicated in, if it's done to a pregnant woman, she is very likely to miscarry. It may not happen for a few weeks. But the oxygen deprivation, we could spend the whole time on this. I won't. In general, the types of injuries that you see with domestic violence are very different than with accidents. They tend to be focused much more on the trunk. Very often they're directed, certainly on women, in the breast and genital area. And also be aware that to look for defensive injuries. You know, people don't normally get bitten under their arm unless they have that arm trying to strangle or hold somebody while they're hurting them. Sexual abuse is just an enormous range. And again, I put down a whole bunch of things, but that's just a sampling. Abusers in general do anything and everything they can to take advantage of someone's vulnerabilities, and I've just listed a bunch of them. Whatever it is, whether it's forcing her to abort or preventing her from having an abortion when she wants to, making 10% of men who abuse their women have raped them in front of children. There's a lot more sexual abuse going on, and people tend to be most reluctant to discuss that of anything. I should say there are a lot of overlaps often between or among the types of abuse that I list here. So that stalking, which I put under emotional psychological abuse, sometimes overlaps with other things. Using the children is a huge one, whether it's to make them carry messages back and forth, to spy on the other parent, threats to the children, abducting them. Abducting is really big. Most women, especially who have visitation after separation, complain bitterly that it's a real problem that they have to go through. Of threats that they'll never see their children again. Demeaning the mother. And frankly, custody fights. Custody fights are very hard on families, very hard on children. It is not something that abusers do out of any kind of fondness or anything. The financial abuse, again, is to hurt them. Spiritual abuse, you might say that's emotional, and in a sense it is, but I separated it out because it's a real aspect. And exploiting other vulnerabilities like abusing pets, outing somebody who's gay, or even threatening, whether it's true or not. Any of these things can often be very, very harmful. Some people have trained using the power and control wheel, and I put that up just so that people will have a chance to see it. It gives another way of portraying what a range of abuse there is. Who perpetrates the abuse? Well, I'm mainly going to talk about intimate partner violence as something done by men against women. In fact, of course, it can be done in any direction. And in same-sex couples, but overwhelmingly, it's a problem of men against women, just as breast cancer is overwhelmingly a problem that women have, although men can also have breast cancer. Also, I should say that of men who are abused, the statistics are that half of them are abused by male intimate partners. There is no profile of a batterer. There's no way to tell who somebody is, although virtually all of the batterers, and even more so with people who stalk, are very, very narcissistic people. Many have long criminal records. In Massachusetts, the average woman getting an order of protection for the first time has a partner who gets it against an intimate partner. That intimate partner will have 13 entries on his probation record. That said, there are also many, many batterers who are controlling and smart enough so that there's no record in their own against anyone else. And by the way, many of those criminal records are not just against intimate partners. And many of them are also very serial abusers. There are some real differences. I should say there are real differences as to why we get some of the reports saying women are equally abusive. They almost always use the conflict tactic scale, which, whether it's the first or the second or slight variations, they are all flawed. They are very over-inclusive in what they measure, and they're very under-inclusive. They assume, for example, that all abuse happens during arguments. Well, in fact, half of abuse does not happen when even a word is being said. The woman is awoken in the middle of the night to be battered, for example. Another problem is that men minimize and deny their abuse and exaggerate what women do. Think of O.J. Simpson. And women do the reverse. So the data, when you ask people, is more skewed than in fact what it is. There are big differences also. Men perpetrate the much more severe abuse, and they also do it after a breakup, which is something that's very rare for women. They do it for power and control purposes, to terrorize her, and sometimes the children, and a very few for sadistic enjoyment. They know it works. And they know they can get away with it. He's going to win every argument when he does it. These are not people who are anger controlled. They're very much in control what they do. And it's not a matter of stress, because most of what they do in life that produces lots of stresses, they are not responding to with violence. I should say that the apologies that you get are only something cultural. For example, in the South Asian community, people tell me they virtually never have heard of a batterer ever apologizing. And it's done early on in the relationship. So, whoops, did I go back one too many? I guess okay. How it affects women. Again, there is no profile before she's abused. There are some risk factors. If she was sexually abused as a child, that is a clear risk factor. Growing up in a home with abuse is a very major risk factor for men for becoming abusers. Anyone who heard Jay Silverman speak just an hour or so ago heard that. But for women, that is a tiny, very, very weak factor. Women split, and this happens sometimes even in the same family, and unless you're looking prospectively, you won't see it, because the mental health system does not see the women who immediately say, aha, I know what this is, I want nothing to do with it, and boy, they're out of there fast if they see the slightest hint of violence in a relationship. Other women say, oh my God, this is women's law. And, you know, they tend to pretty much cancel each other out. Why don't women leave? Well, the reality is most women do leave. When you look at the statistics of how many women have been battered over their lifetime versus how many men are batterers, what's happening is you're seeing that many men are battering many different women. And the reality is most women do, in fact, leave. It's, in any case, not a very helpful question to ask. Much better to ask her, what can I do to help you stay safe? Also, ask if the abuse is escalating, because that's a much more serious problem. And obviously, the focus should be on why, in heaven's name, is he doing that? But some of the reasons, if you ask, she'll say, he's been telling me it's all my fault, and it must be. I guess that's right. I love him. Interestingly, lawyers almost never get that as an answer. She knows that's going to be the absolute end of the conversation, and it is. And, you know, whether it is now or not, but, I mean, basically, there's no response to that. I think women have learned that may be a good way to get rid of the problem. Much more to the point is that she usually has no money, no support. He's absolutely bankrupted. Her facilities for any other options. And of course, she has no self-confidence, courtesy of him. Excuse me, let me grab some water. Sorry about that. The real reasons I think women don't leave are really two. One is the fear. And the second is it all has to do with the children. They are the key. Half of mothers will tell you they stay for the sake of the children, and they believe it. And we give them such unfair, misleading messages as to how important it is for there to be a father in the home. It's not clear, as again, those who heard Jay Silverman speak, that is not the case. The children are not doing well when they're in a home where there's abuse. Some keep hoping maybe he'll change. Some rather naively think the children don't know about the abuse. That's very unlikely. And many probably most correctly say the very last one, I need to stay to protect the children. And boy, there's a lot of truth. And I would warn, if anyone is filing child abuse, or I should say neglect charges, file them against the father, not against the mother when he's the abusive one. Because that's just playing into all of losing powerfulness for her and empowering him. And don't assume she's a bad mom. She may be doing everything she possibly can. What we need to do is help her get custody. Another thing I would warn is don't tell her that if she is leaving, don't give him advance notice. That is almost always a disaster. These men do not play fairly, and it is, you know, really going to be very bad. How does this affect the children? Well, whether he hurts them physically, deliberately, while they're trying to protect their mothers, or whether he does it inadvertently because he has no respect for what's going on. He's just throwing things or literally throwing her about. She may be holding the baby at the time. Sexually, we heard again, some of the statistics are actually as high as 19 times as often the batterers sexually abuse their children. The emotional problems are basically the same as mothers, although they often are different in how they play out, and obviously are age rather different. I'm going to move on. It's important to maximize children's resilience. What they need most of all is to increase their bond with somebody who's going to be supportive, protective, in a long-term stable relationship, and let's be honest, that's usually the mother. And it's important to keep that bond really clear. One of the things that that's very current that a lot of people do is to put gag orders on her. Don't disparage him. Don't talk to the children anything about him. Well, we'll talk about that in a moment, but it's important for kids to know that they're going to feel angry with their fathers, and they have to work that through. What does not work for the mother? Oops. I'm sorry. Did I back go? Thank you. Mediation. Couples counseling, parent coordination, being sent to parent coordinators, is not helpful in these cases. As I say, batterers do not play fairly. By the way, the average contested case that a battered woman spends on, if she has to pay for her attorney, is $95,000. These guys deliberately plan to take, as they say, to bankrupt her, you know, drive her, make her homeless, put her on welfare, whatever's going to most shame and humiliate her. And they do it very often. So all of these things just are more forums for him to keep going back to court and trying to turn the system against her. Giving sole custody to the mother is probably the most helpful thing that can be done. Better intervention programs, by all means, send him, but be realistic. They are not, the data is just simply not there that they're very effective. NIJ now says that at most they reduce 5% of the violence. That's just simply not a very useful thing. Orders of protection are really much more helpful than most people indicate, but not always. They tend to stop the worst violence. They tend to increase petty stuff, especially stalking, monitoring. It can be very exhausting. But trust her instinct. She probably, more than anybody else, has the ability to know whether this is going to be a problem. Mutual orders of protection are worse than no orders. They aren't enforced in other states in general. They give him more tools to use against her. Most particularly, he now has an order of protection that he can say she's violated. Police have no idea what to do with them, i.e. they arrest both parties or they do nothing, and the courts are no better. So the result is she stops calling the police, she stops using the courts, she doesn't bother to do anything, and she's left to defend herself. And that means the violence is likely to escalate. And they also deny, every state has a law, or various laws, saying judges have to consider domestic violence and custody determinations. And they deny her that advantage. In half of the states, it's actually a presumption that she get custody. They're also not therapeutic. Because they blame her. He never has to acknowledge the abuse. The children have no idea what to make. It sees that they're both equally at fault, and dad certainly reinforcing that. All the focus gets turned on her, and it reinforces the myth that it's a family or communication problem, and the courts become lazier and lazier and do nothing and see it just as a dysfunctional family. And because she's much easier to change, they're far more likely to focus on her. Referrals are really very good. Shelters, obviously. Medical referrals, and therapists, if she wants. You have to trust her. That it may be something you feel very sad about, that she's not getting the help, but she knows what's going to backfire. There's a wonderful tool, the danger assessment tool, that Jackie Campbell, who's dean of Johns Hopkins Nursing School, did. And it is something really, something I recommend. You can download it for free. I've mentioned that batterer programs are not very helpful. And I think I'm basically at the end. Incest happens as often in rich families. In fact, probably slightly more so than in poor. It's the one type of family violence that differs. Canada has documented that men actually make 16 times as many deliberately false child sexual abuse and incest allegations as do women. We have all these myths that women are the ones at fault. We shouldn't be doing that. There's no way to tell from psychological tests that somebody is a perpetrator or a victim, and I should probably conclude by saying, you know you've succeeded if you've managed to empower the victim or the children. Thank you. Thank you to each of the speakers. Dr. Sujata Warrior was scheduled to be with us today, but she had to cancel, and I thought I should mention that. Questions for our panel? Anyone have any questions?